Hello and welcome to Utopia On. I'm Bronwyn.
I'm Tanea.
I'm John.
I'm Ben.
I'm Sarah.
And today we're talking about International Women's Day, which is this week. And so let's start with some of our favourite female authors. We read a lot here. We meet a lot of amazing authors as well.
I mean, Sarah. To me, that's a ridiculously large amount of authors, right?
Just give us a few.
Just start with like, A and work through to Z.
I didn't do it in alphabetical order. Okay, so.
Because naturally you would do that.
Should I read out just my whole list?
Do it.
Okay. When pressed, this was what came out. Margaret Atwood, Hannah Kent, Isabel Carmody, Jane Austen, Charlotte Bronte, Hannah Yanigahara, Candace Fox, J.K. Rowling, Amy Kaufman and Meg Spooner, plus Louisa May Alcott. It's my list, apparently.
Oh my god, mine was a little bit more.
That's quite succinct. I like that. For you,
bam, 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 bam. Yeah, I could have kept going though. That's the thing. It's like when it's like half the authors in the world, possibly more than half the authors in the world.
So wait, tell us though, why those authors? What is it about their writing, their characters, their personalities?
Okay, well, I guess because I was thinking of books that I would say are strong, like feminist reads or important books by women about women, and The Handmaid's Tale jumps straight to mind. So I think that's why Margaret Atwood came out first on my list. I also, a lot of her books are just The Blind Assassin, Alias Grace. These are like amazing books on my list of favourite books ever.
All things that await you, Ron. Exactly.
Hannah Kent is just phenomenal. Like, Hannah Kent's just amazing. She's able to like completely create worlds that, she doesn't even create them. I feel like she actually just takes us there. It's like the visceral, descriptive, like, world that she creates is just phenomenal, and you know when you're going to go into one of her books that you're going to be living in another time and it will feel like you've actually been there. Plus, Burial Rites, I feel like, is a book that has a lot to say about feminism and the treatment of women by men. And I feel like poor Ben and John are going to be really reluctant to talk in this podcast.
No, I was just thinking the exact same thing about Vera Wright and the way Hannah Kent works. I'm just sitting here nodding along with you.
Awesome.
Hannah Kent, her writing has a way of evoking the visceral nature in things, and she makes historical fiction just real and contemporary. It doesn't feel like you're reading inside a genre. It feels like you're reading something completely special. I just love her
writing. Or that you've actually somehow
really
time traveled.
She's on your list.
Yeah.
Good list.
Isabel Carmody, obviously, because she's my world. And I frequently ask myself when in times of, like, when I'm not sure what to do, I ask myself, what would Elspeth Gordy do? And she's a character, the main character from the Over Newton Chronicles.
Right.
She's got to be on the list. Jane Austen, do I need to explain why?
Not really.
It's a given, right?
I love Jane Austen.
Yeah, she's got to be on anyone's list of favourite female authors.
She's on mine. She's number two.
There you go. And I feel like...
No, I didn't rank them, but she's the second one that came out.
Does anyone else want to say their list?
I can go, because mine's like right here, and we just mentioned it. So, J.K. Rowling, Jane Austen, Ina Blyton, V.E. Schwab, Leigh Bardugo, Celeste Ng, which is a recent favourite, Maggie Stavada, Amy Kaufman, and then a couple oldies, Meg Cabot and Lacey Harrison.
Who's Lacey Harrison?
You would not know who she is. It's someone whose books I like read so much in high school. And like I look back on them and I know they're not very good now and they're very dated because like they're the kind of like mean girl stories. But like I was obsessed with those books like for a solid few years. And so, you know, she's important in my reading.
Oh, guess who I'll be looking at when we get back to it.
Oh, like, yeah.
Bron, what's your list?
My list is a lot shorter because, as I've said many times, I've read a lot less books than you guys.
I don't think that you can say that for very much longer.
Oh, I don't know. If we put a list of your books and my books, I'd stop.
You're catching up quick.
No, I know I'm not.
Who have you got?
I mean, obviously people like J.K. Rowling. And this comes a lot... For the most part, it comes down to the female characters in their stories that have spoken to me. That's why they stick out. So, like, Hermione Granger from Harry Potter and things like that. And Maria Snyder, she was sort of one of my quite early loves with Yelena. And then Lainey Taylor and Leigh Bardugo and things like that. So, do you have only got a few?
Now the men talk.
Yeah. I don't really want to hear them talk. I don't want to talk.
John, who are your favourite female authors? You can't say Natasha Walker, probably. We can. We won't stop you.
She will be listening.
I can't believe she wasn't on my list, Woods.
Thanks. Yeah, there's so many. You know, when I look around behind you right now, there's a whole lot of books there, and I can see Christina Stead, I can see Kate Chopin. There's George Eliot, there's Jane Austen, there's the Brontes, all of them except for Branford.
Bramwell.
yeah, that's how important he is, all right? I don't remember his name. Elizabeth Bowen, Rosamund Lehman, Willa Cather, Edith Wharton. Come on, brain.
See, so you have a list, you just go on.
Virginia Woolf. Mm. Oh. Fantastic. Catherine Mansfield, if you're going down that line. Yeah, there are just so many women writers who have influenced how I think and how I feel. You know, when someone like George Eliot exists, who sees so much into so many hearts and into so many minds, it's just extraordinary. She's like, to my mind, someone like George Eliot or even Jane Austen, are like Shakespeare. I mean, if Shakespeare was born a few hundred years later, he would have been writing novels, he wouldn't be writing plays.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have written the kind of scope that something like Dan O'Deronda or Middlemarch takes in, just massive. With the Australian line, you know, Miles Franklin, I just find that book so fresh and so true. My brilliant career, absolutely divine. And it's such a perfect book for young people to get into, and for especially for young women to read, and just have that wonderful no up your sleeve. Just keep that no up your sleeve. Oh, no, I don't think so. I think I'll go and do what I want to do. You know, just absolutely brilliant. And these kind of things arm people. I mean, I'm armed by all these writers. They give me so much understanding of how one can live and how one should live. And it's brilliant and to have that. And for young women to know these writers exist and know that they're out there and they can be read at any time, and with the massive amount of wisdom that gets passed from these people who are long gone, directly into us.
It's also vital for men to read these women. You know, we'd be lost without this stuff. Reading, and even modern authors. I'm thinking Elena Ferrante. I'm thinking even here in Australia, we've got Charlotte Wood. We've got Michelle de Kretser. We've got Sophie Laguna. These women are writing extraordinary novels that are making us better people having read them.
Yeah, I think everyone needs to read the latest Michelle de Kretser, really to really get a slap in the face.
I still haven't read it.
This age needs that book, and unfortunately, it needs to be put into everyone's household and everyone's having a bit of a read of it, because we're climbing way too far into ourselves and not seeing what others are doing. And this book just reminds you to look outside your own window and have a look at life that's actually going past. Brilliant, brilliant stuff.
I'm just picturing you like going into everyone's houses now. I'm just like, here's a copy for you and a copy for you.
Wouldn't that be fun? I like that.
Just as a fairy.
There's this great movie. I can't remember the title from the name of the movie, but there's this character, and his favourite book is Love in the Time of Cholera, and he wants everybody else to love it, so he like wraps it up, you know, and it puts a bow on it and stuff, and he leaves it places for people to find. And there's this great scene where one of the main characters sees this guy for the first time and sees him leave a package and just thinks that, you know, he's left something, so he chases him down the street.
I would think it was a bomb.
You know, and that's exactly what the guy says. He's like, you just can't leave packages around post 9/11, like those kinds of things. But it was really beautiful, like the whole movie, he's just adamant, like everybody needs to read this book. It's just great. And so you should do that, John. You should just start leaving the book places.
It's
like
an expensive hobby. Yeah.
It is. Well, I don't know, bulk buy them?
Something that as you've been selling books, I've been selling books for years. One of the things that is really interesting right now is how many women are now leading the way in commercial fiction as well. Because it was kind of, like in the 70s and 80s, you kind of had you had some outstanding names like Danielle Steele and Jackie Collins and the like. But now, if you look at commercial fiction in Australia, there are hundreds of women writing successfully in Australia across all genres right now and doing it extraordinarily well.
Do we know what the ratio is of books published by men versus by women? Is that information that anyone has heard?
No, but I reckon it's so far into the women's side. And this is one of the reasons why the Stella Prize came up, is because there are more books being published by women, and the publishing industry is largely editors are women, publishers are women, a lot of the machine behind publishing are women, and yet the reviews in some of these papers just kept consistently reviewing men, even though they're only a smaller proportion of the books being published every year. In fiction, I'm thinking more in fiction, because there are men, there are boring men who want to write boring books about boring tiny subjects, and they are legion. and they'll publish and find ways to get their weird little subject into print. So we can, if we ignore them, because they're just mad, and come into the fiction world, then I reckon there's far more women writing brilliantly.
Yeah, I think locally in non-fiction as well, women are being represented in narrative non-fiction and all levels of non-fiction more and more readily. Yeah, and the Stella Prize reflects that. It's a fiction and non-fiction prize.
And by the time this podcast comes out, because we're not recording it on the day that it will air. Sorry, everyone. We're a little bit ahead of the day that it will air, but we will know the shortlist, right?
Yep.
That will be out by then.
It'll be happening.
Shortlist for Stella.
If only we knew the titles that would be on it now. Should we speculate?
No. No.
It'll all be amazing though. Did anyone else write? So I did a little list of what I think my must-read books for International Women's Day are, and then also what's on my, what I haven't read that I feel like I should have read.
Okay, very
good. Okay, so Handmaid's Tale also, we've talked about that. Barrier Rights as well. Natural Way of Things, we briefly talked about. Charlotte Wood, The Bell Jar. The Awakening by Kate Mansfield, sorry.
Chopin,
thank you. The Little Women by Louise May Alcott.
I love Little Women.
White Sargasso Sea by Jean Reese, and Jane Eyre.
So wait, those are books that you want to read?
No, those are the ones that I feel are must reads.
Okay,
even
yes.
Though a part of me hates White Sargasso Sea because it kind of vilifies my favourite fictional hero. But anyway, I can still recognise it's amazing if you just consider it to not be canon. And then on my TBR is The Female Eunuch by Jermaine Greer. Never read it. Is that really bad?
No, not really bad.
Not really bad that
it's
I've
good
read
that
it.
You want to read it.
Feels like an oversight. and also Gloria Simon, My Life on the Road. Have not read it. Mm-hmm. Feel like I should have read it. That's
Second Sex, Simone de Beauvoir. Haven't read it. Should have read it. There's tons of wonderful books that, it's good to know that they exist and we're going to get to them one day, because we will.
I say that, but I mean, life just continues. Mm-hmm. And then there's a limited amount of years that you're on this earth. And can you ever read them all?
We could try.
We can. Well, we've got a fantastic little collection page, International Women's Day. It's going to be on the site all this week. And that's going to point you to all those books we've just talked about, pretty much.
Well, here, everybody, help me out. Tell me one book that I should read for International Women's Day. Do it.
Oh,
Sarah's concerned.
Don't put us on the spot.
Yeah, I'm doing it.
So of those that I listed, have you read?
Oh, let's just get back to one. If you want a really, really strong female character who is good, who is even-handed, who gets what she wants, Persuasion. Anne Elliot. It's on your list.
But I am going to read it in 2 weeks
you
when I'm on the beach.
That. I can't wait for you to read
I will
that.
Send you a photo of me on the beach reading it.
That's a great one. That's the one.
That's the one. That's what I'm reading for International Women's Day.
Because Anne Elliot, the circumstances in which Anne Elliot is born ain't great. And the world that she is in, the constraints upon her, terrible. But she is good and does as much as she possibly can within those restraints, and it's just divine.
Plus, she is of a temperament that I feel like a lot of women are, which is that you're more inclined from birth, you're raised in a way where you feel like you have to bow to authority, right? It's sort of, I think that men are raised, and less so now, but I'm talking...
Yeah, I was like...
it's not so much this way now, but, in the past, and certainly I feel like in my childhood, while I was told women can do anything, it wasn't really, it was more like a thing that people said to you, but it didn't really feel true, right? Mm-hmm. And Elliot was raised to basically do what she was told, and she does do what she's told, and she does it for family and she does it for duty, and it's the wrong decision. And the book is kind of, maybe it wasn't the wrong decision, maybe she had to go through what she went through, and it all had to work out the way that it did work out. But it's kind of, I think it's interesting because through the course of the book, she learns to stand for herself a little bit more and make her own decisions.
That's why Jane Austen's just so clever, is that there's so many layers to it, and you can sort of see this person mature in front of you, and their life experiences affect that change in it. Plus the things, decisions she makes and the things she reads and all those different things come in and pile in on her, so help her come to the conclusion that we all want.
and beautifully so.
Another podcast, another Jane Austen discussion.
Oh, I can't wait for that podcast. That's going to be fun.
It's just going to be too gushing.
So apart from, so we've mentioned one character. What other characters are there in fiction that you know, represents what an International Women's Day is all about? When you got the throne of glass, Sarah J. Maas, main character, kick-ass heroine. Yeah, so you got, I mean, these days that kind of character is someone who, you know, is turning
resonates with a lot of...
Well, it's turning everything upside down, isn't it? You know, because
I have not read
the series,
so I can't...
I think there's an important distinction to be made between a character who's holding a sword and talking like...
And who's got a strong...
Yeah, and someone who's actually strong and who's got agency in her own story and who isn't... her actions aren't completely dictated about what hot guy she's into. Not related to the book we're talking about, but, you know, I think it's an important distinction to make.
But it's
apropos of nothing.
But it is a shift in, a shift in publishing, a shift in storytelling to put women into those roles.
I definitely think it's a shift in YA fiction as well, because I feel like that is the kind of main character we're getting a lot now. This strong, kick-ass kind of female character. And it's done well, but it's also done not so well.
Exactly, yeah. I think there are some that are done well, and there are some that have all the trappings of being a strong character, but when you actually examine that character and the decisions they make and what motivates them and how much control they have over their own story, some of them, not so much.
See, I think what always stands out in terms of strength for me with characters is not the kick-ass characters. It's more the characters who... know what they know and you know, they stick by it despite people ridiculing
moral them. Strength.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, the people that come to mind are like Hermione from Harry Potter.
Especially book Hermione, because all of the things she did with...
We can't
book
talk
Hermione
about...
Hermione is different to movie Hermione.
No, it is.
There is a whole sideline that did not get discussed in those movies, and that's all of the like house elf rights and all the things she
that's,
did.
That's what I was thinking.
Even when people were so against her
even
opinion,
her own
she
friends,
stuck by it.
And her own friends would ridicule her.
Don't laugh at us, John.
No, it's true. Book Hermione was way more of a nerd than movie Hermione, in a good way, and I say nerd as a compliment.
Something I saw with all the women's marches that were happening in America recently were like a lot of posters saying that without Hermione, Harry and Ron would have died in the first book, and I think that's such a lovely message because it's so true. She saved them so many times, and I think that's a nice message.
Yeah. And she did it with smarts.
Yeah.
Exactly. I like as well a lot of the tweets we've been seeing recently about the kids from... who are all, you know, motivated and gathered together, and everyone's saying, oh, why are people surprised by this? Because of all the books that we've been feeding them, like we gave them Hunger Games and we gave them all these books about people in a dystopian society rising up. Mm-hmm. Why would you be surprised that they're doing this? I liked that. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, there's even people like, just a really random one, but Lucy Pevensey from Narnia. She's the same, like she sort of has her beliefs about it, and she, even though people are not believing her, they still, like she sticks by what she
I like Lucy, but I can't talk about Narnia because I feel like it's a feminist's nightmare.
No, it is, but I'm talking about Lucy. Lucy specifically, and then even people like Claire from Outlander, I know that, you know, a lot of people don't like Outlander, but if you look at Claire and...
Claire from Outlander, I can get behind.
She again knows what she knows. And she sticks by it, but she's also quite willing to admit when she doesn't know something.
Yeah.
And learn from it.
I always found it a really interesting choice that she chose to have her heroine from the 40s going backwards rather than whenever she was writing. Yeah,
woman.
She would have been writing that book in the 90s, right? And she would have made a conscious choice to not have it be a 90s woman. I always wonder why. That's just a sidebar. Guys.
I think
if you're listening, if you're listening,
Diana Gabaldon, can you tell me why?
Yeah. Okay. John?
What? My favourite, well, the characters.
Yeah, some of the characters, come on.
Well, there's so many. One of the ones that stands out for me as someone who's slowly coming into their own is in Christina Stead, Teresa, in For Love Alone.
Mm.
Christina Stead is an astonishing writer and thinker. And, you know, she was raised by this madman of a father who she wrote about a lot. He sort of turns up in different books,
mm-hmm.
in different guises too. He must have been one of those really interesting people that you know, you could love in one moment and then despise another and then be a monster in a third book. But in Love, For Love Alone, there's this slow coming together of Teresa, and it's pretty much, I mean, I like to think of it as really quite autobiographical, of coming together of Christina Stead to understand what love really means, and what she's capable of doing as a heart, and what she wants out of this world, and what she wants out of a partner. And it's just, and because it's so quietly done, you actually can feel the change as you're reading this thing, and you can kind of take part. And that's so difficult in writing. And you see the development of this extraordinary woman come together bit by bit, experience by experience through this book. For Love Alone, for me, is one of the real great books of coming of age. Absolutely amazing. And Christina Stead is one of my heroines, or heroes, I don't care. And she is just such a bright, such a clever and multifaceted mind. To have that document of her coming into it, that's just brilliant. So, yeah, her.
Okay.
Good answer.
Yeah. I've already kind of briefly discussed Hermione. I think Hermione will always be number one. But one that's more recent and topical is, and I'm kind of praising the author and the character here, is from the book The Hate U Give by Andrew Thomas.
Yes.
And
yeah.
That is a YA book that came out last year dealing with the Black Lives Movement. And it's so important in this day and age. And it has a really strong female lead character, and I think her name is Star, and it's her trying to decide whether or not to use her voice because she's seen something truly horrible happen to her, one of her closest friends. And I don't know, I just think that book has managed to stay, I think, within the top two positions of the New York Times bestsellers list since it came out last year, and it's still there, and more people are reading that book,
mm-hmm.
and feeling empowered by that book, and I just think that's such a more wonderful thing. And
yeah, I think that's a really good example. And we didn't even really, I mean, we talked a bit. There's a couple of really good... Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Hey, Ben.
Oh, hello. John's holding the mic. At my face now.
Stop singing.
I'm trying to think, but it's... Everything feels a little bit fraught to me. I really enjoy reading people make mistakes and
mm.
develop and progress. And I like reading the complexities in people. You know, fiction gives you so much in so many different ways. I'm kind of backing out of giving a single answer. I'll just say Hermione. Hermione as well.
Yes. Do it for Hermione.
No, it's a great choice.
Yeah,
I approve.
Yeah. Crowd pleaser.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting one that people keep coming back to because Jo Rowling, when she wrote this book that became such a phenomenon, you know, had to make a lot of choices. You know, she had to pick an orphan boy and make him the hero over and above making a woman the hero. But she still managed to slot this fantastic character into this book, and this character has sort of stood out for so many female and male readers for, you know, more than a decade now, two decades now, as something really important and special. So that's really cool.
Also, she felt necessary to put JK.
Yes, I mean, that's a whole other phenomenon.
Mm.
Well,
I mentioned George Eliot earlier, and George Eliot's name was George
Franklin.
Eliot.
I wonder...
Henry Hammer Richardson.
I wonder if that phenomenon was finally going to go away.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, because, you know, you can see it more and more with the JL, you know, these...
But I think they're copying J.K. Rowling now. I don't know if it's so much to hide their gender, it's just, it's kind of fashionable.
I don't know. I mean, crime writing, you often see it. You still see women sort of trying to disguise the fact they're...
J.D. Robb?
Yeah.
Instead of Mia Roberts?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's still a, still a an issue that's out there right
yeah.
now. But, you know, this world is changing so fast, and the Me Too movement is really accelerating change at the moment. And you know, the changes, there are some more still to do. Like, there really is a ton more to do. We're talking about women in writing, and you know, apart from a couple of writers, we haven't talked about anyone from different backgrounds other than, you know, being Anglo. So many writers we've talked about have either been English or American or Australian. There, you know, the diversity in writing and in writing for women as well still is really quite in its infancy. And there, you know, even though we've had a lot of Indian, great Indian writers come in, but that's part of the colonial. So yeah, there's a ton to be done, and it's great to see this is happening. But
yeah, it's really true. I can't believe. I mean, we shouldn't have this podcast without talking about Zadie Smith or Arundhati Roy. Like, that's an oversight.
I guess for me, I feel like there's so many important female authors who I've not yet read, and I feel like I can't discuss them because I haven't read them, and you know, that's quite sad. Like, I guess it's sad, but at the same time, like, I have all these amazing works of fiction and non-fiction to come to get to experience in my lifetime. To.
I feel the exact same way, and I think we probably will for
the next it's always like that
decade at least. Like, I can't imagine getting to it forever.
There's no getting to it. I mean, if you we're walking in books and we see how many books are published. And we also know how many books have been published before we got here. And there are just so many books. And it's wonderful having these sort of discussions. I hear about authors from you guys that I've never read. I want to find out more about you guys. This is the kind of forum. Because the wonderful thing about books is we're always going to be learning. There's absolutely no way to get it done. There's no way to learn all this stuff. There's no way to read it all either. Even just a fraction of it. We live such short lives, and there are so many books.
I can never actually imagine getting to a stage where I'm like, right, I'm
done.
That's it. No more books I need to read.
No, never
happen.
I still feel guilty when I reread. You know.
Maybe that's what heaven is.
When you just read all just the being books. Like,
I've done it all. I've read them all.
That'd be hell.
Yeah, you're right.
That's the opposite place. Actually, coming to the end. I mean, when you think of we're very lucky. We're in a mass production age. But if you were living in the Roman Empire or Greece, you probably could have got through.
You'd have been like, that's all the books horrible. In the world.
Oh,
I guess.
Wow.
Yeah, like Belle from Beauty and the Beast, and she's like has to read from that library, just that little collection, and she rereads it again and again because they're the only books in her world.
See this? I thought you were talking about the cartoon one. I'm like, that was a massive library. What are you talking about?
No, later, but in the beginning when she's in that village, it's like, oh, you're going to read that again? Okay.
Yeah, that's no lie.
No, it's not.
Yeah, people would, I think, what was it, Jefferson's father, I think, Thomas Jefferson, like, left him 150 books, and that was considered a massive library.
Yeah. I can't hear Thomas Jefferson without thinking Hamilton, and now I'm just singing a song in my head.
Maybe we can just go out and sing it.
Let's just end the podcast with Tanae's
musical
number.
I'm not singing it, no. You can look at me.
I'm going to save Tanae and finish this podcast right now, because that's really mean, everyone. Thank you for listening to us. Rattle on today, everyone, and we hope you read some great books for International Women's Day.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.